from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the 15th day of June 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And Mark Russo will join us to take a look at the weather forecast. Along the way, we'll have a discussion with Jim Goodman, the president and a member of the board at the National Family Farmers Coalition. NFFC is one of the plaintiffs in the Dicamba case as it's related to GMO cotton and soybeans. Of course, that case still in flux as they went back to the court, the plaintiffs that is, and asked last Friday for them to enforce their ruling across the board and around the nation. We'll hear more from Jim Goodman about the reasons why they brought the suit in the first place on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, July corn for the day finished three quarters lower at $3.29 1/4. December, 3.41 1/2, a penny and a half lower. And the March down 1 1/2 at 3.53 1/4. July soybeans at $8.69 down 2 1/4. And the November futures there at 8.76, 3 3/4 lower. January 2 1/2 lower at 8.79 3/4. Next year's March at 8.75 3/4 down 1 3/4 cents. The bean oil futures 24 cents higher at 27.74 on their settlement price. The bean meal down 60 at 288.40. July soft red winter wheat up 2 3/4 at 504 3/4, and the harvest month for the hard red at 445 3/4 down 2 3/4 cents. June live cattle unchanged at $96.07 1/2. The August at $96 even, up 67 1/2 cents. Feeders 7 1/2 higher in the lead August at $131.17 1/2, and the lean hogs at $52.27 1/2, 60 cents higher for the afternoon. Crude oil for the day at around $36.90 a barrel, up about 64 cents. Ethanol futures down 7 1/10 cents. Gasoline on the whole sale price 3 6/10 higher at $1.16 1/10. Diesel fuel at $1.13, that's heating oil, is up around 3 4/10 cents for the day. The Dow's off, or rather up around 285 points at 25.821, and the U.S. dollar is down 0.18 at 97.125 for the afternoon. Gold futures on the day are currently at $17.19 1/90. That's down $9.40. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I want to start out with the Informa numbers that were released. They showed an increase in soybean acres, I think by a couple of million, and consequently a decrease of roughly the same number, I think, in the corn acres. What'd you make of those?
Yeah, bean acres went up by 2 million. He actually came, or they actually, raised it up to 85.5 versus the USDA 83.5. It increased the production by a little over 200 million bushels. So if you look at that increased production and add to the bottom line, it's going to add up. So we've got to see how demand and actual yield unfolds here as we go through the growing season. Corn acres down 2.9 million acres, down to 94.1 versus USDA at 97. In return, we saw a reduction in production by 500,000 million bushels there, and so we can see the carryout drop under 3 billion bushel if we see this reduction in acres follow through. So it kind of helped provide a little support for the corn there as we went through the day.
And for the soybeans, was it the reason that pushed things lower?
Well, we started out lower. The outside markets kept a lid on things. Also, too, this morning's inspections report was at the lower end of expectations for most of the commodities there. And the crush number, even though it came below expectations, 169.6 million bushels of beans used for crush, that's still a huge number. Also, too, to help provide a little support after the lower open, was that we sold another 390,000 tons of beans to China. So these sales continue to keep coming at us. Beans were able to close, 4 or 5 cents off the lows, and not higher on the day, but off the lows. And I think that was kind of constructive for Monday. Last couple of Mondays, we were higher, but we're back into the normal routine of starting the week out on a soft note. And the way the outside markets were able to come back here late in the day and move higher, I think we're in a position here where today's lows will be viewed as support. Crude oil's up about 70 cents a barrel, and the Dow's up over 250, as we record this at the moment here. So I think that gives the overall market just a little bit of confidence in here that maybe enough's enough for right now.
USDA's weekly crop progress report is due out at 3 o'clock this afternoon, Central Time. What do you expect crop conditions to show?
About unchanged. The average analyst guess is 75% good to excellent for corn. And in the beans, same thing, 72% good to excellent in the beans. I think we got to kind of look at the state breakdowns, see if the good states stay good, and see if the poorer rated states improve or not. A lot of this is going to start to be localized. There's some areas too wet, there's some areas too dry, and how this all averages out is going to be a tough one to figure here as we go through the growing season. Probably the main thing today is the meat sector. It started off fairly low and was able to come back and close somewhat higher today. So we did see a hook reversal to the upside in the meat complex, and with these low prices in through here, hopefully demand will start to be stimulated. Big news item was a resurgence of the virus in China, and it's being kind of linked to a meat market there. And the significance of that is they're trying to spin it as imported meat might have brought the virus in. Well, we were led to believe that meat in general was not able to transmit the virus. And if all fingers point to Brazil, where this virus is really rampantly escalating, maybe we can see some meat purchases come back to the U.S. as maybe some of these countries avoid the southern hemisphere, Todd.
July 4th is coming up. That's a long weekend this year. Will it signal a change in the market?
Well, oftentimes you do get some changes, trend changes on three-day weekends. Now, this particular holiday being about two and a half weeks out, we could get in a situation here, if this forecast does not cooperate, we can come back in here and see some weather premium put back into the marketplace. And with a huge short position in corn from the commodity fund, short over 290,000 contracts, it would give reason for them to be covering some short positions as we go through the month of July, if the weather would happen to turn warmer and drier. But it's going to take a major weather event to get this market off center. Right now, the mentality is that we've got a decent crop coming at us, and demand is still questionable with this virus floating around. So there's some obstacles to look at. There's several things you can do to get in position. If you need to protect your downside, you can put some price floors under the marketplace. If you do need to move some grain, clean up some inventory, generate some cash revenue, this option volatility is not too bad. You can come in and do some fairly decent cash replacements on paper to take advantage maybe of a late July, early August bounce.
Hey, thanks so much.
Very good.
Kirk Kimmel is with Bates Commodities. Well, if you farm, you probably already know that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals pulled the registrations for three dicamba products related to cotton and soybean, and that made it illegal for farmers across the United States to use those products. Some states went ahead and said, we don't care. At least the Department of Agriculture in those states did, and farmers went ahead and continued to apply. Others said, no. We're going to hold with the Ninth Circuit Court until we get some clarification from US EPA. And that clarification came last week and said, go ahead and use what's already in the pipeline for this year, but we're done at that point until we get the legalities worked out. And then the plaintiffs in the case came back and said, no, the US Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals expects this not to be used. Well, prior to all of this happening, at least this latter part. I had talked with Jim Goodman, who's with the National Family Farm Coalition. They're one of the plaintiffs in the case, about the volatility of these dicamba products and why it was that the National Family Farmers Coalition had joined the case. The last time I talked with NFFC was years, decades ago, in fact, during the crisis of the mid-80s into the 90s, about FarmAid, as they were a primary backer within that organization. I called Jim Goodman on his home farm in Wisconsin.
I'm Jim Goodman. I'm a board member of the Family Farm Defenders and also board member and president of the board of National Family Farm Coalition.
Hold on. What's the Family Farm Defenders? That one I'm not familiar with.
That is a Wisconsin-based group that started back in about 85. We started by gathering signatures for a petition to overturn the dairy checkoff.
I see. And where in Wisconsin do you live?
I'm in southwestern Wisconsin, kind of midway between Madison and La Crosse.
Tell me why it is that the Family Farm Coalition decided to go to court over dicamba as it's related to the formulations for genetically modified cotton and soybeans.
Well, we have, being a coalition, we have a pretty large membership base, I think about 28 or 30, sometimes I lose track, of the groups that belong to NFFC. A lot of them are grain farmers, a lot of them are small vegetable growers, and we were concerned that due to the nature of dicamba being quite volatile and drift-prone and all the problems that were seen back in the 60s with that, that re-releasing it, new formula or not, would pose a pretty great risk to a lot of non-target crops.
Were you surprised that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals made the decision when it made the decision?
Well, first of all, I was surprised it made the decision. As far as the timing, you know, I'm only guessing, but you know, it should have been made earlier, of course, before so much planning was done. But with this pandemic, I think everything is slowed up. Whether that's part of the reason or not, I don't know. But yes, I was surprised that they made the ruling they did, just because we've seen very few rulings against new pesticides.
Yeah, and so they, the court, of course, polled wheat scientists and extension studies and some other court documents as well to make a decision related to how US EPA registered these products, and it was only a temporary registration. I think that would have been up in November of this year, a conditional registration to begin with. Do you think this is a step on the way to simply not approving this for use in the future?
I suppose it's a step on the way. I guess I would have preferred if, before they gave conditional approval, they would have done all the required research and consulted with, you know, all the various scientists that have been involved with dicamba over the decades and made a ruling based on the real potential problems that we're afraid, or we've seen happen and we're afraid will happen again, only to a larger extent due to the large number of acres that it would have been sprayed on.
I would dare to say that producers who use this product understand that it's volatile and that it gets up and moves, but that over the intervening year and a half or 2 years, enough of the crops in the primary growing regions have converted to dicamba resistance that they're less worried about it today. How do you balance out their lack of concern because of that, I think, today with the opinions that your organization has held about the volatility of this product and the way that it moves across the landscape in unintended places?
Well, you know, I used to be a conventional farmer, and we sprayed, and we had a fairly small acreage, just a few hundred acres. And even with that small an acreage, finding a good weather window to spray because of rain or wind or whatever was difficult. with farms being so much bigger now and farmers needing to spray thousands and thousands of acres, and a lot of that spraying being done by custom applicators, I think, you know, and based on the labels I saw for some of the initial dicamba products back from 2016-2017, the application restrictions were pretty difficult to follow. In a couple states, I know Arkansas was one, I can't think of the other, basically said, you know, you really can't spray this because there is just not an opportune time to do it. They were supposed to spray it at a particular time of the day when the sun was not shining bright and the wind wasn't blowing. So I guess NFFC was concerned that it's going to be next to impossible for farmers to follow the labeling restrictions. I guess the labeling instructions were probably well-intended and possibly adequate to mitigate some of the drift effects, but being able to follow those restrictions would make it very difficult, I think, for farmers, and thus we were concerned, as you know, our farm members were, that they were going to see more drift and more crop damage.
Is the National Family Farmers Coalition in support of chemical agriculture in general?
Well, a lot of people assume that we're all organic farmers, and we're not. And it's, no, we support, I guess the easiest way to say it would be that we support farmers making a fair living and being able to farm in a way that does not injure people or the environment, a way to farm that ensures that they're going to make a fair price for whatever it is they grow. And with the increasing cost of inputs, you know, especially chemicals and seed, GMO seeds, it's farmers are farming on a very narrow margin, most of the time below the cost of production. And if it weren't for government crop payments, they probably would be consistently losing money. So we're concerned. I mean, I guess farmers would sooner have a fair price rather than government bailouts. And the way farming has been going for many decades is that the inputs keep getting more expensive while the price for their crops hasn't changed much other than, you know, those up and down variations we've seen. So we would support anyone's right to farm however they choose as long as they do it responsibly and safely. And in order to do that, they have to be paid a fair wage.
Hey, thank you so much.
Hey, no problem.
Jim Goodman is a board member and the president of the National Farmers Coalition. The organization is one of the plaintiffs that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals made a decision on dicamba products, three of them, in the last couple of weeks that caused a pause in the action across much of the nation until some Department of Agriculture said it was okay to use those products. And then the plaintiffs went back to the Ninth and asked to enforce its ruling. The makers of the dicamba products have gone to the Ninth as well. If the court sides with the plaintiffs in this recent motion, EPA does have a few options that could allow farmers and applicators to use dicamba up to the cutoff dates in their particular states. In Illinois, that date is now June 25th. It was June 20th, but IDOA, the Illinois Department of Agriculture, has extended the date. The legal wrangling around these three dicamba products is likely to continue. It appears that farmers can go ahead and spray, though that changes from day to day. The more interesting aspect of the lawsuit will be whether or not the companies decide to try to register dicamba for use in the 2021 season, and the impact that will have on farmers' decisions this fall as they decide which types of crops they are going to plant and to which herbicides they may or may not be resistant. On this Monday, Mark Russo joins us from Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Mark, thanks for being with us. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell me a little bit about this fine weather we've been having. And I have to tell you that farmers always have something they're worried about. And right now, they're thinking, I might need some rain.
Well, Todd, for some of the portions of the Midwest that have missed out on some of the rain activity here of late, the next couple of weeks doesn't look to offer a whole heck of a lot here coming up. Now, specifically, the next really main opportunity for rain is coming up about a week from now, or it's really next week, as this week features a relatively quiet condition in terms of rainfall prospects. And really all the primary rain activity here in the central and eastern U.S. is really going to be focused across places such as like Virginia and the Carolinas, and for much of the Corn Belt, and then extending on into the plains, drier than normal conditions will prevail.
Tell me about those areas and how dry they are. Start in the plains and then you work your way this way.
Yeah, well, the driest areas here so far this month have been the southern plains. So Kansas and Colorado down through Texas. That's where rainfall has been less than 25% of normal, even some areas less than 10% of normal. As you go further north, it hasn't been quite as dry. In fact, for much of the Midwest, it's been quite variable. You have places such as eastern Iowa that received the remnants of Tropical Storm Cristobal back about a week ago, and actually some areas that saw some flooding as a result of the rain activity. But then you go further east into Illinois, and rainfall has been less than 75% of normal, even less than 50% of normal in a few locales. So it's been quite variable, but certainly as we go through the next couple of weeks, we will be seeing the dryness expand due to the pattern.
Are you worried about the dryness in the Southwest expanding very much into the Corn Belt?
Well, what we're watching here, Todd, is that, you know, that would be a concern if that happens during July, especially as we go through, you know, corn pollination and then further down the road into soybean pod development, but that's more so of an August thing. That's something that we're researching on right now, and we'll have some answers for that actually later on in the week, but certainly that is the thing to watch, and how that evolves during July is obviously going to be pretty important. And that's something that we're trying to hone in on with this week's research.
So today it's just a problem to think about for the future.
At this time, yes.
Anything else we need to talk about?
Well, in the Europe and Russia sector, Russia and Scandinavia will be the driest areas here coming up, which again is something to watch, and the longevity of that dryness, especially in the Russia grain belt. How that evolves during the month of July will also be an important item. So again, not something to get overly concerned with right now, but longevity is something to keep an eye on.
Hey, thanks much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse.